This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to our show. I'm proud to announce that we are joined today by a new member of our Radio Parallax staff. That would be Steve Valentino, formerly of KZFR Chico, who's done public affairs broadcasting for some time up in the Chico area. Welcome on board, Steve.
Well, thank you very much for that build-up, Doug. Appreciate it.
You, I understand, are now starting school here at UCD.
I am a freshman. I've been here for about 2 weeks, and I've enjoyed it a lot. I like the campus. I like what it has to offer. And although I'm getting a little tired of riding my bike everywhere.
Oh, now come on. That's part of the Davis experience. Well, we look forward to having some. In fact, in this very show, we're going to do some insights that I think you as a student can offer the KDVS listening audience. And, well, stay tuned for that one. How about this one? Let's start with this. Scientists list world's funniest joke. Oh, does this sound like something you want to jump into with me?
Sure, why not?
Well, we like to do a little bit of humor on this program from time to time, and one of my mottos that I firmly believe in, I like to quote the famous American writer H.L. Mencken, who commented on the art of analyzing comedy by saying that analyzing comedy was like dissecting frogs. Very few people are interested, and the frog dies of it. I can't think of anything worse that I got for this program than an analysis of what makes something funny.
Well, Doug, what does make something funny?
Well, I don't know. That's why I wouldn't even attempt an analysis. But apparently some scientists got the idea. This is Dateline London, October 3rd, in a project described as the largest ever scientific study into humor. The British Association for the Advancement of Science asked internet users around the world to submit their favorite jokes and rate the funniness of other people's offerings. Now, we've all gotten these emails.
Indeed, we have. So, what jokes made it on the list and which did not?
Well, they said there were 40,000 jokes submitted from 70 countries, and 2 million critiques later, they came up with the consensus view of what is the world's funniest joke.
I'm guessing it's not from Ellen DeGeneres.
That would be a good guess on your part. Okay. I would not suggest that this is the world's funniest joke. However, based on the survey done by the British Association for the Advancement of Science, no less, this was, as modern science can best attest, the world's funniest joke.
I honestly can't wait.
All right. Well, can you be more enthusiastic? Here it is, the world's funniest joke. A couple of hunters are out in the woods when one of them falls to the ground. He doesn't seem to be breathing. His eyes are rolled back in his head. The other guy whips out his cell phone and calls the emergency services. He gasps to the operator, "My friend is dead. What can I do?" The operator, in a calm, soothing voice, says, "Just take it easy. I can help. First, let's make sure he's dead." There is a silence, then the guy comes back on the line. "Okay, now what?"
That seems a little watered down to me. I mean,
maybe it was my telling.
No, I don't think it was your telling at all. I think just that having that many people agreeing on something that is funny doesn't necessarily mean that it really is.
40,000 jokes, 70 countries, 2 million critiques, that's the winner. You know, I don't know.
Well, are these just English speakers, or was it translated around?
Because, I don't know.
I mean, it'd be funnier if it was almost a translation.
They say here that that there were numerous other jokes in the Laugh Lab here that also ranked pretty highly, but people differed in the different nationalities on what they liked. Apparently,
well, the French like Jerry Lewis.
Well,
so,
I know.
You know.
People from Britain, Ireland, Australia, and New Zealand preferred gags involving wordplay, such as the following. Patient: "Doctor, I've got a strawberry stuck up my bum." "Doctor, I've got some cream for that."
That's a bad joke.
Well, that is a bad joke.
Okay. But, I mean, compare that to the one that you read.
I know.
It's pretty much on the same level, I would say.
Americans and Canadians, according to the study, favored jokes where people were made to look stupid. Texan: "Where are you from?" "Harvard grad." "I come from a place where we do not end our sentences with prepositions." Texan: "Okay. Where are you from, jackass?"
That's actually a bit more accurate than
I don't know. Anyway, there was one funny one that I thought I would just throw out here as we close this bit on the world's funniest alleged joke. Okay. Marriage mocking featured in the top American joke as follows. A man and a friend are playing golf one day. One of the guys is about to chip onto the green when he sees a long funeral procession on the road next to the course. He stops in mid-swing, takes off his golf cap, closes his eyes, and bows down in prayer. His friend says, "Wow, that is the most thoughtful and touching thing I've ever seen. You are truly a kind man." The man then replies, "Yeah, well, we were married 35 years.
Now, see, that I think I would have voted that the best one. Out of the group that you read, I would say that that was the funniest.
Well, I don't know, and I'm not going to analyze comedy because, very frankly, you know, frog dies of it, and very few are interested.
All that they teach us at Davis is that everything is relative. There are no right answers, so.
Is that what they're teaching you?
Generally, yes.
I see. All right, well, let's move on.
Well, I heard that you made a trip down to L.A. last week, and I noticed some trivia books around here. So
yeah, the two are connected. I did go down last week to audition for Jeopardy.
And how did that go? Did you get to meet Trebek?
No, actually, this is the second time I did it. I auditioned 2 years ago, which was done in Sony Studios last time, which is right there on the soundstage with all the big lights and the dais up there and the lecterns. Without Alex.
Because mm-hmm. I mean, he looks a little, in this picture here, he looks a bit like Burt Reynolds.
I can't attest to that. I have not seen him in the flesh. But the second time, this last weekend, we did it in a hotel. So it was not done at Sony's. We didn't get to go into the studio with all their giant sound stages, which was kind of a bummer. But it's a tough test. They basically give you a screening test of 50 questions. You have to pass 35 out of the 50. And, you know, it looked like a smart bunch of people who thought they were Jeopardy contestants, about 80 people. And I was looking around the room getting a little bit nervous. And it was a hard test. I wasn't sure that I'd passed. I did pass. I was only one of 12 people that did. They really set out to flunk 85% of the people, and apparently they do.
Hmm. Now, what happens after you pass the test? Where do you go from there?
They then do a simulation where you go down and pick up the little buzzers, and they want you to keep ringing in. They want you to answer questions. They want to ask a few personal questions about yourself to kind of see how you come across. And truthfully, no one seems to know what it is they're really looking for. I mean, if you watch the show, there's a wide variety of people that do make an appearance. We'd all like to know what little angle to play, you know, how to look like, whether you look nerdy or whether you look, you know, whatever look they're looking for,
right.
Which I'm sure has a lot to do with it, being that it is, you know, coast-to-coast television. They want something that you have that is undefinable by the contestants. We were all speculating on it. No one seemed to know.
Well, you know, I haven't actually seen the show lately, but I've heard that they're actually making changes to make it more competitive with other game shows, like,
well, they raise the money.
The ones that don't necessarily reward knowledge as much as Jeopardy does, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the
yeah.
weakest
How
link.
Many fingers on your right hand?
Yeah, the questions along those lines, you know.
Right.
And
well, they did double the money. So Jeopardy's now worth what Double Jeopardy used to be, mm-hmm. and Double Jeopardy has doubled itself so that you can actually have like $2,000 questions on the high end.
As opposed to, you know, knowing about Paddington Bear and being able to get $800,000.
Well,
although is the millionaire still on the air?
I think it is. Trebek pointed out that, like on Jeopardy, you know, our contestants, you know, have to earn their money the old-fashioned way. You know, they have to like go out there and, you know, do it the hard way. So anyway, I don't know what'll happen. If a call does come in, I hopefully will get to go on the show, and hopefully do better than last time.
Well, what exactly do you mean by last time?
Well, I did appear on Win Ben Stein's Money 5 years ago.
Former Nixon speechwriter?
Yes, he was.
How did that go for you? Did you win all of Ben Stein's $5,000?
I'm sorry to report that I did not win all of Ben Stein's $5,000. I won $1,500 of Ben Stein's dollars.
Did that even cover your ticket to
oh,
get
absolutely.
Down there?
Oh, sure.
And your hotel?
Oh, I stayed with friends. I got friends down in L.A. Didn't cost a lot to go down and compete in the show.
So as a whole, was the experience, I mean, is it something, are you using that to kind of compare how you think Jeopardy will be?
Or? Oh, I think Jeopardy will be harder. Mm-hmm. Ben Stein doesn't ask enough questions, which is mm-hmm. what I kept waiting. Just hit me with the questions, guys. You know, I mean, more questions, the better. And they only ask a few, if you've ever watched the show.
Well, it's on Comedy Central.
And they're trying to milk it for laughs. Although it's very bizarre watching them film Ben Stein when they've got a guy whose job it is to act as the cheerleader for the audience. The audience, I shouldn't maybe reveal, oh, I can reveal this. The audience is basically appears to be homeless people from Los Angeles who are paid minimum wage to sit up in the audience, in the seats, and cheer loudly and laugh uproariously at these lame lines they throw out. And the guy kept cheerleading, like, okay, when they say the line, I want you to big laugh on this one. regardless of whether anyone thinks, you know, a line is funny.
Well, I think some of the stuff they have can be funny sometimes. You know, some of the jokes that they have within the questions themselves, but I can see why just having people laughing would enhance it and make other people think it's funnier.
Why they have laugh tracks. Yeah. Why they fake up, you know, people laughing uproariously at sitcom jokes that, you know, no human being would possibly laugh at. Things like, well, I'm going to go to the store. People laughing uproariously. It's like, wow. But it was a little disturbing to watch this guy just shamelessly cheerleading to get laugh lines out of
shamelessness in Hollywood, Doug?
I know. Shocking,
isn't
it?
My God.
I know. But actually, I lost a bin because I'd never seen the game. It was when it first started. I didn't see the game, and I mismanaged my time in the booth. I only got asked 8 questions, of which I got 4. Ben answered all 10 and answered one more, so I chipped myself. He did apologize for the questions. He thought they were really a bad bunch, and after the break apologized. Said, man, those were terrible.
Let's go from Ben Stein back into Jeopardy because we have some questions here. So, well, if we can actually
You're going to hit me out of the book?
Yeah, we're going to hit you out of the book.
Because I can't reveal to the listening audience. Because I will not reveal to the listening audience what some of those questions were because I'm not giving anybody a leg up to pass.
This is printed by, this is called the Jeopardy Challenge.
All right.
The toughest games from America's greatest quiz show.
And you're going to hit me with something.
Let's start out fairly easy. What is the scientific name for the shin bone?
The shin bone. The tibia.
That is correct.
I should hope so.
Let's go to the category 1979. I'm sure you're familiar with that year.
I lived through it. What happened? Okay, hit me.
What was the acronym used to refer to the treaty signed by Brezhnev and Carter in Vienna in June?
I believe that would be the SALT Treaty.
SALT II Treaty.
I wonder, they probably wouldn't give it to me. It was the SALT II, you're right.
How about moving on to celebrity relatives?
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Dr. Zhivago wasn't this actress's first film. As a child, she appeared in her father's film, Limelight.
That would have to be the daughter of Charlie Chaplin, Geraldine Chaplin.
You are correct, sir.
Thank you.
Well, 3 for 3.
All right, that's good. I'm gonna go out on a high.
Well, I wish I could have found something to stump you, but...
All right. Steve, let me ask you this. As a man, you know, there on the ground at UCD, I picked up a copy of the California Aggie on a recent trip into Davis to do the show, and noticed there was a long article here about the Sigma Alpha Epsilon Pi sorority, which I gather appeared on MTV.
Ah, yes, the infamous Blue Sorority across the street from UC Davis on Russell Boulevard.
Blue? Is it colored blue?
It is colored blue.
Okay.
And there's usually a security guard out in front at night.
I don't actively watch MTV.
Okay, let me explain to you the concept of the show. I'm sure you're familiar, even though you are ancient, with the reality show.
Yeah,
get off my lawn. Anyways, you're familiar with the reality show concept, quote-unquote, reality. You can see my hand motions.
Yes, reality shows. I've heard about them. I've caught a snippet of them here and there, but to watch one, you'd have to basically put a gun to my head.
It's a wasteland, essentially. Yeah. And MTV has caught on to this. And so they've for 10 years, they've been doing a show called The Real World, which they get 10 people, put them in a house, and then tape the mayhem that ensues.
Uh-huh.
MTV wanted to do a show on sororities. And so they did this show called Sorority Life, and they wanted one on the West Coast. They went to Seattle, they went all over the place, but no national sorority in their right mind would let MTV come in and tape them because they know what MTV is and they know what MTV will do to your image.
Okay.
They looked in Chico, which is my hometown, which, you know, Chico is a bit more of a reputation as a party school. And
yes,
so that
yes,
is going
does.
To that is going to hint to you what they want out of the show. And so they find this sorority in Davis. It's Sigma
Alpha Epsilon Pi.
Pi. And it's an independent sorority, independent Jewish sorority. And they pitched it to them, and they loved it. They wanted to do it. They had MTV come in. It was about 10 weeks of footage.
Well, let me quote here a little bit from where this where they the aftermath of this episode. I guess they filmed, what, 13 episodes or something?
13 episodes, yes.
Well, the quote here in the California Aggie said, one of the participants said, "I was pretty disappointed with what they chose to focus on because we do a lot of good work. They failed to show the rest of the nation the community service that we do, the sincere sisterhood that we truly have, and the scholarship. I guess it could be expected, being MTV, but the show that aired was drastically different than the show that was pitched to us. So I guess MTV excluded all the part about the volunteer work at the old folks' home."
This is not home and garden television. Do you think that MTV is going to show you spoon-feeding applesauce to disabled children? Or are they going to show you getting drunk and having arguments with your sisters?
This is multiple choice? Let me think.
Yeah.
I would lean toward the drunken arguments.
I mean, MTV has been on the air for 20-plus years. And even for their first, you know, at their inception, their first Video Music Awards, they had Madonna in a wedding dress rolling around on the floor gyrating for a national audience. And do you think that 20 years later, they're going... I mean, it sold. It worked.
Yeah.
People watched.
Yeah.
They know that sex sells, yeah. And they know that kind of bitter arguments like that sell. People want to tune in and watch that. So what were they expecting?
I don't know what they're expecting, but the quote here, not until after watching the show did one of the gals, a summer 2002 UC Davis graduate and previous vice president of SAE Pi, say she realized how much editing affects the portrayal of a situation.
Like, oh my God!
Now, one of my favorite quotes from this article is when the girl you mentioned earlier goes on to say, when you see yourself as a one-dimensional character on a show, it helps you to understand that even if you don't like someone, that doesn't mean that there's not more to them than just the parts that you don't like.
Like, oh my God!
Well, anyway, Steve, I hate to rip on these poor girls who are already, disappointed enough about their experience on MTV, but you just have to ask, what were you thinking?
Exactly. And, you know, I really wish that they would have taken into consideration the impact that it would have had on the university and its image.
Well, the university could have put the kibosh on it, too, I'm sure.
I don't know if they had the ability to do that. I mean, I know that many administrators were not happy, and I know that a lot of students here on campus were not happy with it being here, but...
Well. There's a lot of people that think that, you know, any publicity is good. I think that's the publicist's motto down in Hollywood. Our Hollywood agent, David Rosenblum, I'm sure would agree. But, I just wonder about this whole Division I football. Any publicity is good. I just have a doubt about that. But we'll save that for a little bit discussion later. All right, let's shift gears dramatically here. Story off the web and on the major news media, Reuters and others. Astronomers have dubbed a new cold world on the edge of the solar system Quahuar. After a Native American god, it orbits the sun every 288 years. It caught the attention of the astronomers because it's over half the size of Pluto and has been judged the largest object found out in the deep reaches of the solar system in the last 70 years.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. Maybe we should talk just about the pronunciation of it a little bit. How is a fifth grader in, you know...
It's spelled Q-U-A-O-A-R.
Oh, that, yeah.
Quahuar.
Quahuar. No, that's not going to really sell well to young people.
In spite of the big hoopla that was over this supposed near planet out there, it's 800 miles in diameter. It's only a little bit bigger than these other objects they found called Kuiper Belt objects, which they believe Pluto is just the largest one. There's debate whether Pluto really should be considered a planet. But astronomers can't decide on what the definition of a planet is, so the debate goes on. There's two others they found recently, which were basically 900 kilometers across, a little bit smaller than this object. This isn't that big of a deal. It's not really a planet, but they are going to find a lot of these larger type, you know, asteroid type large bodies several hundred kilometers across out there. They've known that for a long time. They just haven't had the equipment to go and look. Mildly interesting story. You know, we'll just see if there's any developments on it that are, you know, worthy of merit.
Well, just hope Bush never has to give a speech on it, because I can only imagine the verbal gaffes associated with pronouncing its name.
Indeed. Now, a question that I have in my mind on the political front here is that with beating of the drums of war that's going on currently and a need to suddenly invade Iraq, which has been laying there for 11 years minding its own business and not doing anything overly aggressive, there's been talk amid that of reviving the draft, and I haven't heard a whole lot of negative reaction to the idea of reinstating a military draft in this country.
Well, I don't think that the information has gotten out there yet. I mean, from what I've heard, that the Armed Services Committee it's more of a secret hearing that they're doing, and it's only now starting to come out that they're even discussing it. But can you just give us some background? Because you were
I think if you went through this. Yeah, I mean, I was in college at UCD when we went at the very end of the draft era. As freshmen, we all – actually, it was a sophomore year. We all had to go through a military lottery to select where you were going to be in the sequence that was called, which meant if you came up 1, 2, 3, 4, top 30, top 40, you were going to get called. I came up that day 359, so there was, you know, there was no way I was going to get called. But it was such a strange thing to come back. I remember I was at the dorm, the Webster Emerson, is that, which I guess is your dorm.
Indeed it is.
I came back to Web M, and there was a guy I went to high school with who was quite a cut-up. I'll never forget this. Standing out on pole side, throwing his arms up in the air going, "I won! I won the lottery!" Come up with number 4.
So he did go.
He actually was a Mormon and entered service. He knew he was going to enter religious service for the LDS Church and was not going to actually be subjected to the military draft. That was an exemption. But prior to that, you could get out of the draft by going to college. But right before I graduated high school, they eliminated that deferment, student deferment, because they realized that a lot of guys were going to college just to avoid the draft.
Was that deferment permanent, or is...
No, as long as you were a college student. But they eliminated that. They put a lottery back in place. I think it's a very bad idea. I hope they do not reinstitute a draft and we remain a volunteer military service. And I'm sure that's a subject of interest to the populace at UCD. So we'll see what happens with that story. All right, well, we're out of time on this segment, so let's take a break. You're listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. Thanks for coming on this segment, Steve, and join us again soon.
Thank you so much for having me, and I will be back.
All right.
Anyway, he goes, "Are you into S&M?" I go, "Oh, right. Could you, like, just picture me in, a leather teddy?" Yeah, right. Hurt me. I'm sure, no way. He was, freaking me out. He called me a beast, Steve. That's, his totally